everybody, and welcome back to the Laugh Down Podcast. I am your host, Ryan. Joined with me tonight is Jamie and Greg, and we are here for the post-Kansas edition of the Laugh Down Podcast, and we had a full weekend of racing, everything from horses to F1 cars, and everything in between. So I guess we'll start off with the F1 race. Talking about a winner not named Max, which I don't think we expected we would see that this year. And now it's happened twice. Strange it's happened twice.
Yep.
Did either of you guys get a chance to... I know we talked before going on the air, but did either of you guys get a chance to see any of the highlights from the F1 race?
I did not catch any of the highlights, but I did see that Lando won. And in my head, the first thing that came up was that it was on the day that's called Revenge of the Fifth for all the Star Wars nerds. And so Star Wars character Lando Calrissian would be proud of Lando and F1 winning that race for him.
All right. I did not know that. I only know it as Cinco de Mayo. Star Wars gets May the 4th.
Yeah, it's May the 4th be with you and Revenge of the Fifth.
All right. So yeah, there was a lot that actually happened in the F1 race. There was quite a bit of contact through one of the corners between, I think it was Oscar Piastri made a ton of contact with somebody coming through there, and ultimately they chose not to penalize them for contact and running people off course, which seems very off brand for F1, but so is racing in America, and so is a guy not named Max winning. So I guess they just decided that they were going to try and be not F1 today or this week.
Yep. So I did not get a chance to see any of the highlights as I was listening to it in the car while I was working. I had to get out of the car at one point during the broadcast. What was the issue that caused the safety car?
Safety car was Daniel Ricciardo and somebody else going off into a gravel trap. Trying to remember who it was that DNF'd.
I got you.
Let me pull up the results real quick. But it was a... tangling of like 2-3 cars going off the track. Only one car actually DNF from it. It was Logan Sargeant that DNF'd.
Ah, okay.
From it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, there were like 2 or 3 cars scattered off in the gravel trap, and Logan broke the rear of his car so he couldn't drive away from it.
Okay.
But I think it was Oscar Piastri and Carlos Sainz that got together, by the way, going through the corner where Piastri shoved signs off, and F1 started investigating signs for gaining positions while out of bounds, which is the wrong thing to be investigating when he gets shoved out there. But then again, F1 making wrong decisions seems to be a trend.
Yeah, especially here recently.
Although speaking of wrong decisions, they seem to be making the right ones, considering they actually had a higher TV rating than NASCAR did yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. If anybody had seen that F1 had beat NASCAR in the ratings. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that was partly due to the 3-hour rain delay that we saw for the Cup race.
I think it was majorly due to that, because you had a bunch of NASCAR fans sitting around on their TVs ready for a race, and the only race on was F1.
Yep.
I know that's what I did. I flipped to the F1 while I was waiting for NASCAR to help pass the time, and it helped pass the time for sure.
Yeah.
Did you end up watching the entire thing while you were waiting for the rain delay?
Yeah, the entire... because by the time the checkered flag flew for the... F1 race, we had about 30 minutes before we were going to get the command to start the engines. So it was pretty much perfectly timed there. But between that and then having Game 7 of, I think it was Orlando Magic's basketball right before the F1 race, I mean, pretty much everything was kind of set up perfectly for F1.
Hey, Greg, you might want to mute yourself for a little bit.
But that's not meant to discredit any of the work that they've done over the last several months and years with the with the Netflix show and all the other things that they've done outside of the on-track product.
Yeah. Did anyone happen to notice, you know, this is what, the third time in the last two seasons that Max Verstappen has lost a race? And this is the first time that someone not driving a Ferrari actually beat him?
Yep.
Oh, wow. See, that part
because it's been Carlos Sainz the last two or three times that Max Verstappen has ended up losing a race. It's been Carlos Sainz, which is odd because he's not even the top Ferrari driver, but he's the only Ferrari driver that seems to be able to beat Max.
Yep. And that was a pretty popular win for Lando to get his first GP win.
Yep. I also remember. I also remembered seeing a lot of talk about Yuki Tsunoda making his way up into the top 10 and actually becoming kind of the top driver for the quote unquote other teams. Yeah, the teams that aren't McLaren, Mercedes, Red Bull, or Ferrari. Because those four teams tend to dominate the front of the grid. And then the other teams basically get shaken up in a can and drawn names for the back half of the grid. But, so I think that's pretty much everything from F1. One other thing, though, about the TV rating is that NASCAR was on FS1 versus F1, which was on ABC, so more TVs, network TV versus cable. But again, it's still a very impressive number that F1 put up.
Yeah, and also with NASCAR, because of the race getting delayed as far back, they were also competing against the NBA as well.
Yeah, I mean, the end of the race did dip into prime time, but it was also up against a lot more competition in that prime time. Because I saw someone saying that, NASCAR's viewership, especially near the end of the race, was inflated because they dipped into prime time. I guarantee you it was more people dipping out because of going to go watch other sports.
Yeah, especially when playoff basketball is going on. That's like the king of Sundays right now.
Yep. Celtics just won game one earlier today for their series against whoever they're playing. I didn't even bother looking up who they were playing.
I think it's the Cavaliers.
Okay, they're playing the Cavs. Okay. But I think that sums up everything from F1. But before we go and put our fenders on, I think there's a little bit of IndyCar news to talk about.
Yeah, some pretty big news that could have a really big impact on the Indy 500.
Yep. So I will go ahead and pull up and read the press statement from Team Penske specifically here. So following the penalties from the Team Penske IndyCar team and the drivers. Following that penalty from the that was found in Long Beach's pre-race tech, they were assessed a driver penalty of a disqualification for both Newgarden and McLaughlin, who used the push to pass when they weren't supposed to have it available because of something to do with hybrid testing in the preseason, and they just ended up leaving those regulations on there, which was not supposed to be there. So ultimately, it gave them a bit of an advantage. And a 10-point penalty was also assessed to Will Power, who had the ability to use it, but never actually touched the button. So, but Team Penske, as an organization, came out and addressed the situation after they completed any independent internal review that Team Penske had determined that there were significant failures in the process and internal communications. And as a result of that, Luke Mason, the race engineer for Joseph Newgarden, and Robbie Atkinson, who's the senior data manager on the number two car, will be suspended for the next two. Will be suspended from the team for the next two races, including both the Indy Road Course and the Indianapolis 500. And on top of that, you have Ron Ruzeski, the managing director for the Team Penske IndyCar team, will also be suspended those two races, along with team president Tim Sindrick. And those two names are significant because, one, it's your team president, and two, Tim Sindrick is the strategist for Joseph Newgarden and a key component that helped him win the Indy 500 last year. So that Indy 500 title defense has gotten a whole lot harder for him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a question because, I follow IndyCar somewhat, but not enough to really know my butt from a hole in the ground except the Indy 500. Why did they issue a penalty to Will Power if he technically did not use the push to pass?
Because his car was still technically out of spec.
Mm.
Yeah, similar to leaving lug nuts loose in NASCAR. Your car can be out of spec even though it might not provide a performance advantage. Yeah.
Okay.
And honestly, a 10-point penalty compared to a full race DQ is a very light version of that penalty.
Yeah. Oh, that makes more sense now, because I was really confused if he didn't really technically violate anything.
It's
about
to get more confusing, because one of those names I mentioned, Ron Ruzeski, he is the strategist for Will Power's team. So Will Power will be running the Indy 500 without his race strategist because this penalty. Now, I don't know how or why they picked these four people specifically. I'm assuming that the first two members that they listed were both members of the two teams. So I'm assuming that that potentially they were specifically involved with they were the people that were supposed to take that stuff off. And then Tim Sindrick is taking the suspension because of basically being the front for Penske's operations, and that it fell on him to communicate that, hey, we need to get this stuff removed. And then Ron, I don't exactly know the exact reason that they came to suspending him versus whoever the strategist on the three car is, which would have made a little bit more sense on paper, but we're not on paper. We're on racetracks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the Indy 500 definitely just got more, definitely more interesting, and a little bit of a bold prediction. That may have just fell into the hands of Kyle Larson.
I could have. Again, we're going to have to wait and see, because those four individuals won't even be allowed at the track for Indy 500 testing either over the next 2 weeks. So, that's going to be a significant disadvantage for those Penske cars. But I'm curious to see if this maybe leads to the rise of Ed Carpenter. Because Ed Carpenter, it feels like, is always just one step behind the Penskes.
Him and Scott Dixon as well.
Yeah, Scott Dixon. Well, Scott Dixon has the problem of having the Dixon curse. And as someone who is very familiar with curses, you don't want those around you.
So basically what you're saying is those four individuals basically got banned from anything that has to do with IndyCar competition.
Yeah, and specifically
for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, now I don't know what the ruling is about whether or not they can be on the phone or texting people who are at the track, essentially basically hanging out in the in-house studios, because RCR has all those big tech rooms that we've seen before for NASCAR stuff. I'm assuming the Team Penske IndyCar team has a similar war room type thing that they can just go ahead and put Tim Sindrick in. but I don't know the rules on what they are and aren't allowed to do communication-wise with the track. It makes some sense that they wouldn't be allowed to communicate with anyone at the track at all.
I mean, if they're suspended, they probably shouldn't be able to communicate.
Yeah. As opposed to just being told, oh yeah, you can just work from home.
Yeah. I'll take that all day long.
Work from home is not the same as a vacation.
Mm-mm.
Most definitely.
But, yeah, so... Yep, that's the IndyCar news, and they've got the IndyCar Grand Prix at Indianapolis this weekend. I believe that is on Saturday. So, yeah, we'll be looking forward to... I'm looking forward to hopefully getting a chance to at least see some of that. Mm-hmm. I know that race is usually better if it's wet. But, yeah, definitely looking forward to a good one. May 11th. Is that Saturday or is that Sunday?
That is Saturday.
Okay, that is Saturday. Okay. So, yep, IndyCar is on Saturday. And then they will be starting Indy 500 testing, I believe, on either Monday or Tuesday. So they'll have a day or two to basically rest up from the race to get ready for the 500 testing.
Yep. Yeah. Because that starts... Friday or Saturday, right?
No, it starts on either Monday or Tuesday. Qualifications are on Saturday.
Well, I mean, like, the practice and stuff, because I know Larson will be there, and, you know, we talked about Kevin Harvick jumping in his car for the All-Star Race practice and qualifying.
Yeah, so practice and qualifying for... So practice itself will be going on, I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And then qualifications start on Saturday, and then the last row shootout and pole shootout are on Sunday. So, those are the updates for IndyCar. Now let's go ahead and strap our fenders on and head to the great cornfields of Kansas.
Corn!
Oh, and there goes, and Greg's back. But so we'll start off with the truck race. I know Jamie said he didn't get a chance to see much of the truck race, if any.
From what I've seen, though, from what like the little highlights, it didn't look like I really missed much. It just looked like it was a dominant race by a certain driver.
Yeah.
I think you guys might have missed the storyline of the race, because I was following the storyline of the Caden Honeycutt storyline going on in the race.
Who? Yeah, I
exactly.
I heard something about that on Door Bumper Clear today about Caden Honeycutt and Lane Riggs getting into it at some point during the race. Ryan, please do enlighten us with that.
All right, so I don't know exactly what happened to... What happened to Lane Riggs? The broadcast didn't show the fight. I did hear about there being a fight or something, but the broadcast never showed it, so I'm in the dark on that one, mainly because I haven't gone and looked for the video of the fight.
No surprise there. I mean, it's Fox we're talking about.
Yeah. It's Fox and it's a NASCAR Truck Series broadcast, but yeah, Corey Heim definitely, had a bit of a stranglehold on the field. Zane Smith, NASCAR Cup Series driver, was able to hang tough for a bit, but ultimately wasn't able to take the win and wasn't even really able to challenge, because by the end of the race, Corey Heim was basically just coasting. I think he dropped from a 3.5-second lead down to about a 1-second lead just because he was coasting through the corners because, well, he didn't need to full throttle it because... He had a 3.5-second lead.
Yeah, but even then.
But, yeah, so the storylines I was watching was a couple of the guys moving through the field, though. You had Caden Honeycutt moving his way all the way up into the top five, ending up with a fifth-place finish. And then you had Brett Moffitt for Tricon Garage also driving up there and getting a top five as well, finishing in the fifth position. Now, why on earth does Brett Moffitt not have a full-time ride this season?
I did not realize he did not.
Yeah, that's something I was going through. Is like, somebody should hire him full time.
Yeah.
I thought he was especially still running.
Especially after he walked off the bench and got the win for front row at Talladega last year. I mean, I know it's, quote unquote, it's Dega, but to be able to off a win.
I thought he was still running Xfinity for our motorsports.
No, he got benched for Deegan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he got benched for Haley Deegan, and I think their second car has Anthony Alfredo, I think, is driving for that team this year.
Yeah, I know about Alfredo because we talked about it after Dover, him winning the 100 grand.
Oh, no, sorry. He wasn't driving for our motorsports at all. He was driving for AM Racing last year, and that's where Haley Deegan took his ride.
Oh.
Yeah, our motorsports was 2 years ago that he was there.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, so when we get into Xfinity, though, for this coming weekend, we got a new name on the list as well to mention.
Carson? But,
Carson Kwoffel will be in the race.
Let's go.
Six more races and added to his schedule, including Talladega in the fall.
Yep. Yeah, I'm definitely curious to see how he does going forward. He seems to have a lot of talent. I just don't want to see him get rushed up. I'm also curious to see, because I know we were talking in the group chat about where he goes, and talking about how we'd be shocked if he doesn't go to Junior Motorsports, but after thinking about it, I don't know if Junior Motorsports really is the quickest way to Cup for him if his goal is to try and go up to Cup. I mean, Junior Motorsports, you go, that funnel is up to Hendrick, and Hendrick's got four drivers under long-term contracts. You're not going to be getting in there anytime soon, barring a Bowman injury or Bowman underperforming significantly, which he hasn't done.
Yeah, but you also look at, like, guys like Allgaier. He's at this point going to be a life Xfinity guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you look at the others in that Junior Motorsports camp. I mean, I would say Sam Mayer definitely has his eyes on a Cup ride at some point. Yeah, that you're going to be actively competing with. Sammy Smith, you're actively competing with, who's going to be looking for Cup rides. And that's just out of your teammates there at Junior Motorsports.
Yeah. And, when Allgaier did his very short Cup stint, who was the team that he was racing under?
I think he raced a little bit for Phoenix Racing and Premium Motorsports.
Yeah. The 51.
He also did a relief drive for Spire Motorsports in the middle of the pandemic, I think, when I think either Haley or one of them went out with an injury.
Yeah. I'm gonna take the Jamie route here and give out a W Energy bold prediction. Carson Kwoffel is going to win very soon in the Xfinity Series, and it's going to be one of these upcoming races. And I'll even go a step further and say he has a good shot at winning Darlington on Saturday.
Yeah, he's dialing in on the lady?
Oh, yeah.
I think his toughest competition in that race is going to be from his own teammates. I mean, you've got... Yeah, say that's where your toughest competition there is going to be from. Allgaier is really good here. Yeah, the rest of the Junior Motorsports cars tend to show up at Darlington.
Well, that's good. Good people to have around you to learn from too.
Never mind. I already found out who's winning the Xfinity race. William Byron's in the field. Might as well pencil that one in.
Yeah, but guess who else is in the field too?
Who?
Eric Almirola.
Yeah, I don't know. I think William Byron driving for Hendrick might be able to just dominate the race. Amarola's good, and the Joe Gibbs cars are good too, but Byron is, I think, that next level.
I guess we shall see on Saturday.
Yep.
Brian's over here like, you put some respect on Ulrich's name.
And hey, that's coming from, I'm not even that much of a Hendrick fan. I mean, I'd love to see Allmendinger go up there and just wipe the floor with all of them. But there's actually quite a few notable names in the Xfinity Series on the entry list, because you got Byron, Amarola, you've got John Hunter Nemechek in the 26 this week. Let's see, what were some of the other ones? Those were kind of the heavy hitters, and then you had the 88 of Carson Quaffle. But if Carson Quaffle doesn't win this weekend, what's his next race? Because I remember he's running the other Darlington race in August, but that's a long ways away, if that's his next event.
Give me 1 second. I'll look it up real quick.
Yep.
Where is it?
The Kvapo Waffle. If he wins, we all got yeast bagels in the morning.
New Hampshire, and then Indianapolis for the Brickyard, Michigan, Darlington 2, and then Talladega 2.
Okay. So he won't be racing again until June.
So not very soon.
Yeah.
Mid-June's not too far away, but yeah, it will be about a month between starts. But, yep, so that's going to be the Xfinity Series field, and we'll talk probably a little bit more about that when we preview the Darlington weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got a, what I feel like should not be this common of an event, but a third photo finish for the NASCAR Cup Series on the season. Is it just me, or going back to, like, Atlanta, we said that this kind of thing is usually once in, like, a 5 to 10 year span, and now we've had 3 in, like, 4 months?
Yep.
I'm loving it.
The year of photo finishes.
Yeah, I'm not complaining, but it's like, okay. I remember, like, we were talking about it, and it's like, okay, we had the 2003 Darlington finish. Then the next finish like that I could think of off the top of my head was Talladega in 2011. And then it's like, you really don't have too many other near finishes like that until like 2016 with Harvick and Edwards.
And this is also coming off of that the Kentucky Derby had a photo finish as well.
Yep.
So NASCAR saw that and they were like, all right, Kentucky Derby, hold my beer. We're going to show you how it's really done.
Okay, come on. Can someone not butcher the pun, please? It should be hold my horsepower. Tell me that isn't the right joke to be making there, please.
That's a good one.
Hold your horses, Derby. We got you.
Because I was complaining to my coworker about the fact that Larson went and did the hold my beer instead of the hold my horsepower. Like, come on, the joke was right there.
That or you could say NASCAR saw the Kentucky Derby finish and said hold your horses.
Yep. But yeah, ultimately though, it was Kyle Larson coming out on top over Chris Buescher after the scoring pylon, which seems to be a dying breed at this point. Said that Chris Buescher had won the race. Because the scoring pylon had shown Chris Buescher, but then, after looking at the photo, Kyle Larson was ruled the winner. So did you guys get a chance to actually see that finish as it happened?
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, no. I was listening on Sirius XM NASCAR to the MRN broadcast, and I saw the finish and a highlight after the fact.
Yeah.
And MRN is just so much more hype when it comes to finishes like that. And what was funny was they were just as clueless as us as to who won the race, because they were thinking it was Buescher as well. And Kim Kuhn was on pit road getting ready to talk to Scott Graves, who's Buescher's crew chief. And right as she stuck the microphone in his face, they were like, oh, wait, no, Larson won the race.
Yeah, and the problem there is that it comes down to where the transponder is in the NASCAR car, because the transponders don't have a set spot that they are. They're somewhere in like the middle portion of the car. And when your finish is that close, someone's transponder could be slightly ahead, but the actual finish is based on whose nose breaks the plane first.
Yeah.
And they end up posting a very blurry photo of their high-speed camera that films in like 6,000 frames per second, which is way faster than the human eye can actually detect, to help confirm exactly whose nose was ahead at the line. And at the true line, because the painted line, I know people were complaining about that.
Yeah, but apparently that's not the actual line.
Painted line is more of a formality at this point than it is a real marker. Although, yeah. 99% of the time, the painted line being slightly off doesn't make a difference.
No, so somebody from Kansas Speedway took real offense to the picture showing, oh, that line's crooked. He literally went and took a video and to just show, in fact, that there was no crooked line for Kansas.
Yep.
I did not see that.
Yep, but, it was posted right on their Facebook page.
But yeah, again, regardless, though, I think they got the finish right. And I will say it is kind of funny that we got all these highly detailed photos and stuff from these high-speed cameras. Yet, the Daytona 500, we got one blurry photo from NASCAR that was the time of caution.
Yep. And speaking of photo finishes, wouldn't you technically classify the Daytona 500 as a photo finish because they were debating on who was ahead of who at the time of caution and they had to go back to photos to see it?
I mean, I guess it depends on what you count as a photo finish. I think for most people, they count a photo finish as when they're actually racing to the line to when they're finishing the race at full speed versus when a race ends under caution. Same reason why your margin of victory, I don't think they count a race that ends under caution towards the closest margin of victory at X track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a race that finishes under caution at New Hampshire wouldn't be like, oh, it's the closest finish in New Hampshire history, even though it probably was. Because we don't have close finishes at New Hampshire very often.
Yeah.
Yeah, although, but, hey, 2019 did have a good one.
But I want to talk about Chris Buescher, though. Like, absolute class act. Going from the highest of highs to the what feel like at that point in time the lowest of lows. Yep. Knowing you were that close to winning. And to the point where you guys literally thought that you won, only for NASCAR to be like, hey, guess what? Nope, not you.
Yep. I know. I saw plenty of people claiming that, oh yeah, this was just NASCAR being biased towards Hendrick. But the photos back up the evidence, so I think
it's
pretty safe to assume that they got the call right.
Yeah, and when we were talking earlier in the season, before the season got away with the body builds of the cars, I think this is one scenario where the Camaro actually helped out Larson with that win, with their body build, with it having that slight little point.
Yeah, because it points out ever so slightly further.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
If he had a Ford build, that would have been a different story for Buescher.
Yep. Yeah, if he had the alligator front nose versus the crocodile front nose.
Yep.
But
if you think about it, though, you know, you could put another instance in there, the Atlanta finish, because Suarez won that race by the tip of his nose over Blaney, and, you know, Camaro versus Mustang, again, at the line, you know, had Suarez maybe been driving a Toyota or something, Blaney may have won that race.
Somebody needs to get on those dark horses and find some points in it.
Well, hey, if you guys want to talk about Camaros versus Mustangs, in the Texas Xfinity Series race.
The,
Sam Mayer had a pointed nose Camaro going out there and edging out Ryan Sieg's Ford Mustang. Also, Chevy, hate to inform you of this, but Chevy, if you guys don't use those three photo finishes of you beating Ford in a ad campaign by the end of the season, I believe you guys are kicked out of NASCAR for the 2025 season.
Has,
tell me that that will be perfect marketing.
Has Ford won a race in any
No, they
series?
Haven't won a truck, Xfinity, or Cup race. They're over 30.
Nope. Good Lord, Ford.
No trucks. Xfinity, I can kind of forgive them for not having an Xfinity win because they've got Cole Custer, Riley Herbst, and Ryan Sieg are basically the only competitive full-time drivers for Ford. Because then you've got Matt Benedetto, Kyle Sieg, and Blaine Perkins are the other Ford drivers, and Haley Deegan.
Yeah.
I got a new slogan for Ford with an acronym. Failing are real drivers.
That's a good one. I mean, hell, they had two of them in perfect position to win Talladega, and neither one of them won.
Yep.
Those pesky Toyotas, those pesky Chevys.
I know I'm the salty McDowell fan who couldn't show up to the podcast the week after.
He didn't want to take the heat.
Oh, no, trust me. I'm very well aware. That was definitely McDowell's fault. I have... I saw some people blaming Brad, and it's like, Brad did nothing wrong there. And that's coming from someone who is not the biggest Brad fan in the world. And yep. The Carl Edwards jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And like, we've had some high-flying results with Carl Edwards.
Right. I posted that picture in the group chat when I was at Talladega of the two guys sitting in front of me wearing the McDowell shirts.
Yep.
And I got to say, I felt so bad for them at the end of that race.
Yeah, because we were all hyping it up like, yes, we're going to do it. We're going to win a race. We're going to be locked into the playoffs. We're going to be the first Ford to win on the year. And nope.
Sorry, Fords.
And it's gone.
I think this is a great time to do our green flags, red flags.
Yeah, green and black flags.
Green and black, yeah.
All right. Jamie, you want to start us off with that?
Well, I'll say green flag to, from the point that I watched it, making what looked like a pretty clean race to a much more entertaining race. With some late cautions, throwing strategy out there. You had a point where you didn't know if people were going to make it to the end in gas. And then had that Kyle Busch spin create for what we have now as the closest photo finish in NASCAR history. So the racing was really good. I seen some crazy moves, like they were going 5 wide where Chris Buescher just sent it full send in between those drivers there, and then even as the last lap and a half was going on, all eyes were on Larson and Buescher. I was watching Truex and Elliott battling behind them, and Martin hit Elliott with sliding up in front of him, and Elliott did a very aggressive crossover where he could very easily spun himself out. So just kudos to Kansas as a track for continuously putting on some great races. I personally would love to see the championship be decided at Kansas. I would think that would be an insane race where the top four could be in it all the way up to the end and potentially have another photo finish for the championship.
Imagine a 4-wide photo finish for the title.
Ooh, boy! Wouldn't that be something to talk about?
How about we meet in the middle? Let's take the championship to Las Vegas. It would serve NASCAR's need to go to the West Coast, and Vegas is a mile and a half, which seems to be this car's strength. And they've put on some pretty good races at Vegas with the next-gen car.
Do you really want to use the spinning wheel again?
It doesn't matter if I use the spinning wheel, because the dire curse still kills me.
bring back Chicagoland.
In due time. I do miss Chicagoland, though. But my black flag, I would probably say it goes to Martin Truex Jr. Anytime that he feels like he had a good opportunity to win, he always has to find something to whine and cry about now. Now, granted, had Kyle Busch not spun, he probably would have caught Denny and probably very well could have made
Denny
it.
Denny was running out of gas.
But
what the crew chief was saying.
But in this particular sense, Martin Truex is essentially blaming Chase Elliott for making the wrong move. I put that in big quotation marks, for hitting him with a crossover that prevented him from getting up to Buescher and Elliott, or Buescher and Larson. It's the final two laps of the race. Of course, they're going to be driving super aggressive. Of course, they're going to be hitting crossovers if they're able to. And it's not anyone's fault that you just kind of got stuck back there when you were racing side by side with Elliott as the leaders were clanging and banging with each other. So major black flag goes to Martin Truex Jr.
Now, I will say, I think I remember that exact sequence of words coming out of Kyle Busch's mouth in the 2017 Vegas race where Joey Logano decided to battle with him for 10 laps rather than working the two of them together to try and have any shot at catching Truex.
Yeah, yep. Didn't like Kyle Busch then, still don't like him now.
Yeah, I mean, that one made more sense because, again, Joey Logano started battling with him with, like, 10 laps to go. There was still time to run down Truex if they worked together versus fighting with each other and letting Truex get away. But in this case, it was the last two laps of the race. You didn't really have the time to go and work together to try and run down the leaders.
No, you're fighting for every position you can get.
And especially and even Chase when you're fighting, help. Yeah, and especially Chase was going to help Truex try and catch Larson.
No, if anything, Chase was trying to position himself because he saw that they were beating and banging on each other, and he was thinking he's going to steal another win.
Well, I thought Kyle Larson was about to Michael McDowell himself and Buescher when I saw the swerve on the front straightaway.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only person that thought that when I saw the zig and didn't see a zag.
Yep. It's,
oh, yeah.
It was a very intense race. I was on my feet watching it, trying not to yell because I had sleeping kids, and my wife was laughing at me. So,
yep. Well, I didn't have kids, so I could yell as loud as I wanted when Michael McDowell wrecked.
All right, Greg, what's yours?
So other than stating, you know, the obvious photo finish stuff, my green flags have to go to NASCAR for staying ahead of the weather and getting the track dry as quickly as they did. To the fans who came back after the rain delay, because I heard from a lot of people on like other podcasts that place was still pretty packed for that race. My black flag also goes to NASCAR. It's 2024. Give us really good high resolution photos of these photo finishes.
I mean, granted, when you're trying to take a single frame out of a video that shoots in 6,000 frames per second, they're worried about trying to get you the most accurate photo to show the finish over image clarity. And that's also why they went and put those red and black lines to help people's eyes be able to identify exactly where the front noses are. Honestly, I think NASCAR actually did decent with that. I mean, obviously, you'd love for it to be in 4K resolution, high definition, slow-mo replay or whatever, but to get that as in addition to the precise moment that the cars cross the line while going 200 miles an hour, that combination is just not very likely.
Yeah, I can see that. It's just, you know, we live in a technological boom right now, so there should be something.
Yeah, especially when you factor in that the average, that the human eye can only detect about 30 to 60 frames per second. Anything faster than that, and you barely can tell that it even happened before it's already over.
Yep.
All right, Ryan, what's yours?
My green flag of the weekend, I'll give it to Lando Norris winning his first ever F1 race. Figure, hey, it's something we don't see very often, especially compared to photo finishes in NASCAR. It seems like we'll see one of those about once a month.
Yeah.
So I will see you guys in June for the photo finish at New Hampshire. But, yeah, so Lando Norris winning that race. It was cool to see the McLaren orange in victory lane, and cool to see President Trump was there as well, helping with post-race inspection. Not really. He just happened to be in the McLaren garage after the race win. But,
an absolutely beautiful car, the most tremendous thing I've ever seen.
Yep.
It matches the color of my skin.
Yeah, shocker. He was with the orange team, yep. But, and then...
Now you see me, now you don't.
But, yeah, for my black flag of the weekend, I'm going to give it to NASCAR for not bringing the Xfinity Series to this track, because Xfinity races so well at this track that I don't know. I think we missed out on not having an Xfinity race here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you can't have Xfinity Series at the track every week, but this is one of those tracks that it feels like both times NASCAR goes here, Xfinity should be accompanying them.
How often do we get, like, all three series in one weekend?
We'll have it we'll have it this weekend at Darlington.
Yeah, I miss the days of just having all three series at every single track.
I don't know.
Or most of them.
I actually talked about this on my live stream of the race, but I actually kind of miss the days of the Truck and Xfinity series kind of having their own unique tracks as well that were kind of Truck and Xfinity exclusives, like Iowa used to be, Gateway used to be.
Yeah.
And it'd be cool to see that, because it gave us tracks to theorize, like, oh, what would the NASCAR Cup Series be here look like?
Yeah.
I mentioned if you had some of those in trucks, it would make for a little bit of an easier rotation. So you rotate in and out some of those lower tier tracks. Like, for example, if they brought, say, the trucks to Stafford Speedway and swap, and then potentially if that works out well, maybe look at the option of a cup race. But
at the same time, that would also, I feel like, would increase viewership if it was a unique track, because people are like, I don't know anything about this track.
Like, I will say the trucks do have some of that with IRP and the Milwaukee Mile versus the Xfinity Series, which I think the Xfinity Series only has Portland as their only unique race. But, like, I think Portland and Sonoma could honestly trade in and out dates on the schedule to try and add some diversity to the schedule.
Yeah.
Because it feels like the same schedule virtually every year, with a few minor shakeups and then a major shakeup every 5 years or so.
Yeah, I agree.
I also find it funny that we went from having the schedule released in April every year, pre-pandemic, to now post-pandemic, we're usually waiting till like October to hear what the races are going to be. Especially for some of us who don't have that security of knowing that for sure our track will be there.
Yeah.
Honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if they cut both New Hampshire and Dover.
Please don't.
Yeah, I know. Both tracks deserve to stay.
Yeah, please don't.
Well, I mean,
especially in New Hampshire.
At the same time, too,
especially the better mile. New Hampshire's the better mile.
Nah, I don't know about that.
Last year when they were talking about the schedule release, they were trying to nail down some races that they just couldn't get nailed down, which was why there was a massive delay in getting the schedule out.
Yeah, but I mean, it feels like it's been that way every single year since the pandemic shut everything down. And obviously, 2020 and 2021, I can kind of give them the pass of we didn't know what the world was doing at that point with those races. But 2022, 2023, and now the 2024 schedule, all three of those schedules, it felt like just took forever to come out when, for the most part, the world had reopened at that point by the time they were releasing the 2023 schedule in, like, October of 2021.
Yeah, that's true.
And, again, so you had, and that's three schedules in a row that have been massively delayed. Yeah, when the pandemic isn't the reason at this point, or shouldn't be the reason. Same thing I say with IndyCar as to why they can't just keep riding the, well, we had to, change ownership right as the pandemic hit, as the reason as to why the forward momentum hasn't restarted yet.
Yeah.
Because at some point, the momentum has to restart for IndyCar, otherwise their flame will burn right back out to where it was in 2016.
Yep, but going into this weekend, what would you say out of the glimpses that we've seen so far, Ryan? Which throwback cup scheme do you like best?
Take your pick of the Hendrick Motorsports schemes. I think they are all pretty impressive. My only comment there would be that Chase Elliott, could you have maybe thrown it back a little bit further? Although I don't really have much to speak about that, considering how far Kyle Busch threw it back last year. Remember how far back he threw it back last year?
Yeah, I was going to say, what did Kyle Busch run last year?
He was doing a throwback to his first win with RCR at Auto Club earlier that season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was his throwback. And ironically, it's not the first time an RCR-affiliated driver has done a throwback to the scheme that they ran at Auto Club that same season.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a big troll.
Do you remember which other driver did that same type of throwback, throwing it back to an Auto Club paint scheme from the same season that they ran it as a throwback?
Austin Dillon.
Wrong brother.
Ty Dillon.
Yeah, it was Ty Dillon. He ran his Geico scheme, but they called it a throwback to his first career NASCAR top 10 at Auto Club earlier that year.
Yeah.
Like, is there a limit to how far back you have to go for it to officially be called a throwback? Like, at what point is Denny Hamlin just going to throw out a regular FedEx car and just say, oh yeah, I'm throwing it back to last week.
Yeah.
I'm throwing it back to my Dover win at my win at Dover 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. But I mean, I do like the Dale Jr. scheme. I like the National Guard.
Yeah, it is definitely a cool paint scheme. I just know that it's still 2014 does not feel like it should be throwback caliber at this point.
Oh, that's 10 years. That's 10 years.
Oh, I know it is.
So by all things, yeah, you can do a 10 year from a 10 years ago scheme.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah, I honestly think the Byron scheme might be the most underwhelming of the four, even though I still love it.
Yeah.
The only thing with Bowman's is the fact that we've seen it recently when Jimmy Johnson was doing his farewell tour, and when he did his farewell tour with Lotus specifically back in 2018.
Yeah.
We saw him run that exact same scheme.
Yeah, but at the same time, too. Go ahead, Jamie.
No, you go ahead.
At the same time, I agree with what Denny Hamlin said. I mean, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but we're seeing less and less people do throwbacks nowadays, and I think it's starting to like lose some of its luster.
Well, yeah, I heard that talking point, and then I saw Kyle Larson's Terry Labonte throwback, and it's like there are still schemes that people can do throwbacks to.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest problem is the sponsor exodus that we've had over the last 10 years. I mean, the number of sponsors that we have, that we had back then to now, and especially sponsors who aren't willing to change their branding to match a different company's color scheme and design.
Yeah, but like, also with...
Unlike Ally, not every company is willing to just go and run Lowe's blue.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up. Like, with at least Ally allows them to manipulate a little bit, which does give a cool like thought process. Like, if Jimmy Johnson was still racing in today's day and age, what that 48 car would look like. And this is the probably the best depiction of what the 48 would look like with the next gen build.
Yep.
Except for with Jimmy Johnson behind the wheel, it'd probably be spinning out.
Yeah.
That's going to be the only thing he knows how to do in the next-gen car.
Oh, man. You could tell that man was stewing at Kansas. Like, he was just standing there in the infield with his hands on his hips like a grumpy old man trying to figure out.
Best part in years. I mean, that was legitimately his best shot to win a race since the 2022 Indy 500.
Yep. He wasn't mad. He had that disappointed dad look.
Yeah. And he was like, good old seven car, always going to seven us.
Yep. Speaking of guys blaming guys that they shouldn't have, did anyone hear that radio from Austin Dillon's car?
No, I ignore him.
Okay, yeah, because I saw this clip of radio going around. And it was Richard Childress talking about how he was going to bleep Tyler Reddick up.
Huh.
And then Austin Dillon went and said, that was my bad, because he wrecked himself, but Tyler Reddick was just there.
Yeah, but talk about the other 2311 guy, Bubba Wallace. I would say he's an honorary mention for turning around a day from getting spun out and still having a pretty decent finish, even despite that.
Yeah, Michael McDowell was in that same crash. I was crushed, and then I realized the car is actually still racy.
Yeah.
Got a top 10 out of it, and where'd Bubba end up finishing?
I think he was in the top 10 as well, if I remember correctly.
He was not top 10. I've got the top 11 in front of me. Let me see. But yeah, looking forward to Darlington though this weekend. I think the trucks are going to be an interesting one to see, kind of which manufacturer, Chevy or Toyota, shows up.
Yeah, because we know it's not Ford.
Yep. Bubba Wallace finished 17th.
Yep.
Okay, and so pretty decent finish considering.
And how about Justin Haley finishing 19th? Or 18th, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a pretty good finish.
Yeah.
He started 35th, so.
Yep.
But who was driving the 43?
Corey Heim.
Yeah.
Same guy who dominated the truck race.
And where did he finish?
He finished in the 22nd position.
Yep.
Okay. So he must have fallen off during that green-white checker stint.
Yeah. And so I know I saw Tyler, and this is the part I wanted to argue with Tyler about, because he was saying that he thinks Corey Heim's in a cup car next year.
No.
And it's like, the only way I see Corey Heim ending up in a cup car full-time next year, because I could see him being a part-timer next year, maybe helping fill out the 67 or 50 car for 2311 if they want to do a rotational car more often. The only way I see them getting him full-time, though, would be if 2311 either buys a charter, or if Truex actually goes and retires, but at this point, I haven't even heard him mention the word retire this year, so I don't know what his plan is there.
Yeah.
Because last year, around this time, we heard him mention the word retire 25 times.
All right, just wait for the second half.
Oh, yeah, we'll see. Again, the last 2 years, he hasn't made a decision until September, so I would expect that we probably won't hear a decision until September, but...
Yeah.
It's one of those things that the last 2 years, he's been talking nonstop about potentially retiring and talking about the decision. I haven't heard him mention it once this year.
So, no, I don't think I've heard it either.
Yeah, and again, I think that's one of the only two ways that you see Corey Heim get the Cup next year. And even then, I don't know if he's the shoo-in to get a seat next year, because I think Chandler Smith could be a very easy candidate, too.
Yeah, Truex is too busy blaming other people for causing him not to get wins to think about retiring.
I feel like that would be the type of thing to make him consider retiring.
That's why I said wait till the second half of the year. He's going to get tired of it.
but speaking of Darlington, should we get into race picks?
Yep. All right, I will go ahead and
congratulations to Jamie for winning race picks last week with his photo finish.
Who did I? Oh yeah, I took Bub. I took Bubba.
Yep. Oh,
I just realized I probably caused that wreck, didn't I?
Yep. You're a curse.
I literally was like, wait, who did I have? Took out Bubba and McDowell in one wreck.
There's a reason why I'm wearing this Money Lion hat, Ryan.
Okay. Why is that?
To pay my respects to the sadness that was Bubba Wallace in the Money Lion car thanks to the dire curse.
I did not do it.
All right, Ryan, so.
You got the wheel ready, Ryan?
Yep.
Spin away.
Spinning it. Gonna be Greg with the first overall pick.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Pick of the litter.
I am going to take Kyle Larson.
Kyle Larson. Smart. Yeah, I think especially with that nice looking paint scheme, I would be shocked if he wasn't potentially gonna be the best of the Hendrick cars.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm not. Let's go. All right, so. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take, I mean, I kind of mentioned it. You got to pick either Byron or Larson, and Larson's already off the board, so I'm going to take Larson, or I'll take Byron, I mean.
All right.
So I'll take William Byron, and let's go ahead and spin this one and see who's going to be next.
Boy, I wonder who it is.
It's Craigbot.
Oh, dang it.
No, I'm just kidding. It's Jamie.
Oh man, you're putting me in an interesting spot, Ryan, because you literally just handed me Dennis the Menace on a silver platter.
Hey, the last time I picked William Byron, he avoided the curse, so I'm hoping he did get away with it.
But I was expecting you to pick Dennis the Menace, and I was gonna do my first homer pick of the year of picking Chase Elliott, but now you're making me second guess it.
Say, you're gonna take the third Hendrick car off the board? Almost like teams taking quarterbacks off the board in the NFL draft?
No, I'm going to go with the other good one. I'm going to go with Dennis the Menace.
All right. Dennis the Menace.
You can hear the excitement in my voice as I say that.
Hey. I know. You really wanted me to take Denny so that he gets cursed.
Yes, that's exactly why. But you didn't do it, so poo on you.
Hey.
I honestly thought of doubling up on Hamlin for a second.
But at the number one overall pick, I don't think you could have taken that.
No.
Yep, so that's our picks.
Yep, so those are the picks for Darlington. And say, who do we think ends up with the first crash of the race?
Stenhouse.
I don't think Stenhouse is going to be the first crash of the day.
Or Illegal.
Maybe it's just the overly biased in me, but let's see.
Oh, speaking of Stenhouse, did you guys see his contract extension with JTG?
I was excited about that one. But I'll take Harrison Burton for the first crash of the event.
I could see that.
Yeah, me too. So I think that's everything, though, from Kansas.
I believe so.
Packing up and heading to the Lady in Black.
Yep.
See, they don't ever specify, like, black what? Is it a black coat, black hat, black dress? I need more information, Darlington.
Black pavement? Although, granted, the pavement's a very light gray at this point in Darlington because they haven't repaved it in, like, 20 years.
Oh, not my darling in black.
You do not repave another corner of that track because I do not need another corner to take out Michael McDowell. Because if you guys remember a couple years ago when they first resurfaced, I think it was turn two, Michael McDowell spun right off the transition.
Yep.
Yeah, I was not very happy with that transition. But yeah, I think that's everything though for this episode of the Lap Down Podcast. Shout out to our sponsors. We got W Energy, Century PC, Fubo TV, The Alkali Project, and their album The Blood World, who supply both the intro and outro music to the podcast, along with what other ones am I missing? I know Bulletproof Coffee.
W Energy.
Yeah, I said W. That was the first one I said.
Sleeves.
We got Sleeves. There's just so many.
Boo-boo.
Duke Cannon.
Okay, and Duke Cannon. I think that was the last one I was missing.
Yep.
So, yep. Shout out to all of our sponsors. You guys can go ahead and go to our podcast profile and see the links to all the to all of our sponsors. But until next time, hopefully you guys enjoyed, and we will see you guys after Darlington when likely William Byron has a very early crash.
Oh man.
All right.
Hey, I'm playing into it. I know the dire curse is there. So since there's only it, then it's not gonna happen.
To throw a curveball, since there's only three of us, can we pick two? And just
no,
because
everybody else is going to end up everybody else is gonna make their picks.
Ah.
Yeah, I'll get the picks.
Nah, no
just
because
they're not here doesn't mean they aren't gonna make a pick.
No fun.
Yep.
Yep. But as Ryan said, we'll see you guys next week. Deuces. Yep.
Deuces.